I'm someone who loves trying out different makeup looks, but doesn't really wear much on a daily basis, so I like to focus on making sure I have high quality staples. And whether you like a fresh face, full glam, or somewhere in between, you've probably seen Thrive Cosmetics Viral Tubing Mascara. I've certainly seen it everywhere. You know, the one in the turquoise tube? So that mascara, along with all of Thrive Cosmetics' beauty products, are certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free, which I look for in makeup, and they've got excellent quality to match. And something I didn't know from all the mascara videos I've seen is that for every product sold, Thrive Cosmetics donates either that same product, another product that is needed more, or a monetary donation. They've worked with over 500 nonprofits to help with a wide range of causes like supporting cancer survivors, people experiencing homelessness, education access, and so much more. Knowing that makes me feel even better about using their products. And I do enjoy using them. Like I said, I like having high quality staples, and so my favorites are products that are multi-purpose, like the Brilliant Eye Brightener. It comes in a bunch of colors, and I like using them as eyeliner, eyeshadow, and even highlighter. Thrive Cosmetics is luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 20% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/thrive. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS, .com/thrive for 20% off your first order.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
These are all population-based issues. Like,
yeah.
Canada has a very low population. Yeah, Nebraska has a low population.
I mean, like, the odds are there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you know someone, like, around my age from Nebraska, like, it's likely that we at least have, like, some overlap in our Venn diagram of, like, social.
100%.
You know, so.
Yeah. But meanwhile, I went to college with AOC, and we never crossed paths.
Wait,
oh my God. So what's up with
that opportunity?
I forgot about that.
We only overlap by 1 year because she's young and more successful than me.
Oh, if I had a dollar for everyone younger and more successful than me.
I know.
I could only work 2 days a week at a bar.
I'm dyking out, you're dyking out. Let's dyke out together. See what it's all about.
Hi, and welcome to Dyking Out, a podcast that's named after a thing everyone suspected Sarah was doing with her friends in middle school.
Yes!
I'm Caroline Bergier.
Oh, for God's sake, I'm Sarah York.
And today we're dyking out with Arielle Duhem-Ross.
Oh, God.
They're
also
showing
known
off.
As Arielle Duhem-Ross.
About science. Arielle, this whole intro was an inside joke, kind
yes,
of.
Yes,
right.
It was, and now you're all invited.
Arielle is the environment and climate correspondent for Vice News Tonight, the Emmy Award-winning nightly newscast from Vice Media and HBO. She's written for publications like Scientific American and The Atlantic, and if that wasn't cool enough, she's also a fellow Canadian.
Yes, indeed.
But it goes deeper than that.
It does, and we just figured it all out, and it's like this
big... We've been having a party here, you guys, before this intro.
Like all the beautiful mind math floating around in the air as we make the connections.
It's been weird.
Yeah.
It's been weird.
So we just discovered that we are both from Montreal, and I mentioned the university where my dad was a professor, which... happened to also be the university
where my father was a professor as well.
And the dean of the
school
business
that your father worked for.
Yes. Yeah. So kind of technically his boss. Your dad was my dad's boss.
Yeah, basically, yes.
Yeah. And who I definitely met at some point. And
I'm sure I met your father at some point as well. His name is super familiar.
Yeah, it's so crazy. I mean, I moved from Montreal when I was a kid, but definitely still have like a lot of memories from those days that we're coming back. And then we find out that we were both the baby of the year. where we were born, which means we were the first babies born, and we got all these prizes, and we were in the, the paper. I mean, different years, obviously, because there can only be one.
They were the first babies born in their respective years in this town. That's amazing.
It's hard to peek the day you're born.
You get like a picture in the newspaper, and your parents get like certificates for restaurants and a bunch of toys.
Wow.
And a baptism cake.
What?
Which... I am not aware of the baptism cake. Both my parents are atheists, so they definitely did not let me know about this cake.
Yeah. My dad's an atheist, but he will not pass on a free cake. Yeah.
So I'm sure they ate the cake.
Oh, but that's so weird, because we had that picture from the newspaper like framed in our house for the longest time. I don't know where it is anymore, but it's somewhere. Super weird to meet another one of you.
Yeah. I've never met another
famous baby.
Wow, the babies
of the year, all grown up.
Yeah, man. Super
I bet
weird.
If you snapped a photo, the local paper would publish it.
I know. We should write into that paper.
You really should, honestly. I bet to me, it's newsworthy.
Yeah. You're right.
I mean, this is probably the most newsworthy thing.
This has happened there in a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. The connections are just like crazy. Yeah. I can't even believe it.
It also means that we're both Capricorns.
We're both Capricorns.
I don't know if you identify as one or not.
I do. I
also do.
Yeah. Everything is pretty solid, though we did
pretty
have...
Pretty Capricorn-y.
We had an astrology diking off topic, which is our Patreon content that we have. And we were talking about like where my moon is and everything. And that didn't make sense to me. Mm. So I didn't identify with my moon.
I've never gone that far.
But regular,
but
I'm surface level only. Just
what
like
are you?
I'm an Aquarius.
Aquarius.
Yeah.
Okay.
The last day of Aquarius, the 18th. Mm. So I don't know what that means exactly.
Yeah, I don't know either.
It's supposed to be a thing.
You made it sound good though.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It means you're not the same sign as my dad, and that's why we get along.
Great. Perfect.
Oh, good stuff. Oh, man. Now that I texted my mom to tell her about this, and I can only imagine that she's going to call me tonight and want to talk for 2 hours about all her memories of your father.
Really opened a can of Canadian worms on that one, didn't you?
We did. Oh, God. All right. A few quick announcements. On March 8th, I'm going to be on a show at the Duplex called Queer Tiger Beat. And the lineup has all the hits from Dyking Out, because it's Nikki and Gwenna, who are past guests of ours.
Yeah.
Taylor Ortega is going to be on it. Lorena Russi and Jessica Henderson are all on it.
Oh so my God. What a show.
It's a dream show at the Duplex. I believe it's a variety show. I'm going to be doing stand up. Taylor Ortega also tonight. I mean, you're listening to this after it's already happened, but the Kim Possible movie does come out.
Yep. I'm watching it
tonight on the Disney Channel.
Yeah.
She's Shego, the villain in the Kim Possible movie.
Nice.
Yeah.
So we're going to watch the Disney Channel for the first time in years.
For the first time in my life, I'll be watching the Disney Channel.
To support lesbian Shego.
Yeah, absolutely.
Queer Shego. And then also March 20th, Jill Sobule, who has, as you all know, been on the show because we can't stop talking about her. she has a show at City Vineyard in New York, and we are giving away a pair of tickets. And keep an eye on our social media, because that's where we'll be posting. So if you're in New York and you want a chance to see Jill for free at a really cool venue in New York, look out for that.
Great.
And then also our next show at Stonewall is going to be March 25th. The show on February 25th is sold out, and we have a past guest, Alyssa Robbins, is going to come by and perform a little musical set. And speaking of musical sets for a future show in April, I'm really excited about this, but I'm also super nervous that she's going to like blow up and be too big to do our show. Her album just came out on Friday, Sir Baby Girl.
Oh my God. It's so exciting.
Her album is really good. I listened to it like 3 times through already. She is just like this awesome, queer, badass performer. And she's like stoked for doing the show, but I'm like, there's a lot of time between now and April, and I feel like she's just going
to
be in every
She'll
music
stick to
festival.
Her commitments. Come on,
I hope so. Yeah, I think she will.
I don't. When is what's that big thing in Austin? You know that big
South by Southwest.
That's
mid March. That's like early mid March.
Okay.
Yeah, that's like March 9th through like the 14th or something.
All right.
Yeah, is she going to that?
Probably. I don't know.
It's like where all the cool people are going.
I know. And she's the coolest. Okay. So that is news. Oh, and then another fun thing. This week, both Sarah and I got to tweet for Tig Notaro.
It was awesome. Ooh, yeah, we were guests on her Twitter account.
Which gets passed
which
around.
Which is pretty cool. Yeah, basically, like, they let one person take it over from, like, midnight Pacific time to the following midnight. Yeah, and then there's some guidelines, obviously, like some numbers of tweets you can't really exceed or whatever. But then you get to pass it along to the next person. So cool.
How did it go?
It was fun.
It was
yours
a
was
lot
amazing,
of fun.
So was mine. It was like, it was a blast.
It was a lot of fun, but also confirmed some things for me that I didn't want to believe that. So I'm always like on Twitter, like, oh, this joke would kill if only I had more followers.
Only had a platform.
And then from Tig's account, way more followers, and I retweet like my favorite joke, and it's like a few more likes. No, I mean, like,
you
it got
a
more
lot.
Likes,
yeah.
But I'm like, I really thought that this Judge Judy joke was gonna was gonna kill.
I mean, her audience just craves Judge Judy content, so
I thought there was an overlap, right?
Yeah,
yeah,
It was fun. It was a good time. It was really like fun to kind of, well, not really fun, actually. It was kind of weird to see, like, some of the dumb replies to them. You know what I mean? Like, the people who just, like, chime in on Twitter under, like, a famous person's comments and make stupid non sequitur comment. Like, I don't know. It just, like, I could see how that would get.
Was it, like, self-promotion or was it, like, trolls?
Well,
or
no, it was just people that were, like, I don't get it. Like,
well,
like,
yeah.
You know.
And also people, I saw the one that was like, wait, this doesn't make sense. And someone else like broke it down for them real
fast.
Yeah,
I was thankful for that person. Yeah.
mine, so I tweeted.
I didn't respond to any of them, obviously, but. Because you don't want to like, I'm not engaging under her account.
Yeah.
Or mine for that matter. So.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. When I tweeted a gif of her on, because she's on the Star Trek Discovery show now, which people apparently, I didn't know this until I was on the Twitter account, people are like raving about her performance on it.
As
the engineer.
Man, I need to check that out now.
Yeah. People are like, she's so amazing.
Is this
amazing
the show
on it.
Or the movie?
The show.
Okay.
So it's a
like
show on like CBS All Access or something.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay.
Yeah. And Jet Reno, I think, is the character's name of the engineer.
Oh, okay.
But Tig also makes jokes about how she looks like Tom Cruise. So,
I mean,
she kind of. So I read.
I don't see it.
In this picture, though.
In this gif, because she has these goggles on, it looks like Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
So I retweeted it and I said, or I tweeted it out and I said, you know, no one's giving Tom Cruise enough credit for his role in Star Trek.
Oh, God.
And then a Tig fan was like, I'm shocked you would associate yourself with Tom Cruise, Tig, given all. I'm like, if you're a fan of Tig, you know that that's like a joke she makes.
People are so fucking bad at Twitter.
And thought I was like literally.
Yeah. I mean, Twitter is a
it's the
thing that
west.
I have to use because of my job.
Right.
And it's mostly just the worst.
Yeah.
Yeah. I live on it. So.
Yeah.
I love it and hate it in equal measure. Like,
right.
It's just like I vacillate between being like, I have to get out of this hellhole. Yeah. And
also
being obsessed with
my line is that my favorite social network is Goodreads.
Oh, yeah. Like,
even though it's like owned by Amazon.
Right.
But that place is positive, man. It's good, it's good stuff.
Yeah.
At least
man.
The word good is in it. You know?
That's how you know.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I had a really fun time doing it. And I'm hoping that it brought some people to the pod. That was like the whole point, like the whole, you know, because you're only supposed to like self-promote like
a couple times.
Once or twice, maybe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I kind of like bookended it with that.
Yeah.
But it was fun. I didn't put a lot of like, I don't want to say I didn't put effort. I literally just did like dumb throwaway jokes. And then I kind of felt bad after that because like Sarah Kennedy was amazing. Like all these comics that have had it in the last couple weeks have been like, Caitlin Fontana was like so good.
Really?
Like
did
really
their
well
research.
Thought out. Like, you know, they used their character limit nicely. Whereas my jokes were like four words and like a gif. Like it wasn't even, I don't know. It was fun.
It's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It sounds like a lot of pressure. Like
it kind of was.
Feel
I kind of
like
felt
it would
like,
stress me out.
And you have to really sort of be like, I happened to be off work yesterday, thankfully, because I was kind of anchored at home because I had to have, I had to get into her account through my computer because I couldn't do it through my phone. And then I was on mine on my phone. So I was like managing.
Oh God. Yeah.
Both things all day and like toggling between the apps. And I would like accidentally like something under her account. And I was like, oh shit, no, I can't do that. like, I don't think we can, but like, I didn't really want to go on like a liking spree on her account.
No, I feel like I would feel like a responsibility.
I felt like the most paralyzing responsibility. Yeah, it was kind of like, I was like, oh my God. Once I logged in, I felt like one of those hackers on like a 90s movie. We're in. Like, I just was so dialed into it.
What you're saying is you're Angelina Jolie.
Yeah. Okay, that's where I was getting. That was the bridge I was building to that point.
I was right there with you.
Yeah. I also peeped into her DMs.
So did I. No, I had to.
I know. I told everyone I knew who was tweeting. I was like, make sure you check the DMs because you're not allowed to send DMs when you're doing it. Like, that's one of the rules.
Right.
Understandably so.
Yes. So, and then also, Tig isn't really using the account, so I didn't feel like I was invading her privacy.
Yeah, I think it's not something she personally...
Yeah, it's probably fine.
But you get to see who DMs her.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sure it's fascinating. Was,
so, I mean, you know...
There's some big names in there, but...
There is one. I think it's okay to say, because she's the coolest. Monica Lewinsky...
Whoa.
Sent her a DM, and I'm like, I want to reply so bad.
I know.
Oh my
but
God.
Also, it's not from Tig, and I know Monica isn't looking for me, but yeah, I'm such a Monica
like
Lewinsky fan.
The definition of unethical, but exactly. So cool,
literally,
though.
So I felt bad enough. Like, I felt like I had to, like, shut my windows before I, like, looked in her DMs.
It was just, like, a very
but
nice,
they're all silly,
fun,
like,
innocuous,
oh,
too.
Yeah, totally innocuous, all of them. Yeah. There was one from, like, Patton Oswalt in there.
Patton Oswalt. The Ellen,
but I figured he probably has, like, her phone number.
The Ellen Page exchange.
Yeah, that was cute.
That was a funny one.
Man.
Ellen Page.
Also Canadian.
Also on Twitter.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Stirring up some shit with Chris Pratt.
Oh, yeah.
So now for the third week in a row, I think we have another Ellen versus Ellen segment.
I know,
because,
right?
I really agreed with you guys last week.
Like, thank you.
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
I thought I was going to get a lot of
There's definitely like a good
that.
Ellen and a bad Ellen right now.
Yeah, totally.
It's disappointing.
There is. I mean, it's like there's Ellen Page, and then in the Upside Down right now, there's Ellen DeGeneres.
Yeah.
Like that's, you know, this like sort of.
I mean, obviously.
Not fully in the Upside Down. She's not like in the gross, like,
no,
empty pool.
I mean, and when I say bad Ellen, I mean like. Like slightly disappointing, she, could
exactly.
be wish you were better, Ellen.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Wish you were better, XOXO. Like, you know. Yeah. So Chris Pratt just reminds me of like every big doughy hunter I went to college with. Like, he's so fucking uninteresting to me. He was so I loved him.
Parks and Rec Chris Pratt is great.
I know. And someone tweeted, Andy Dwyer would hate Chris Pratt. And I was like, that's correct. Mm-hmm. I loved Andy Dwyer.
So... Chris Pratt, yes, like, I liked him in Parks and Rec, but then I remember he was on, I don't know if it was, like, Fallon or which talk show years ago, and was talking about a joke he did on set, and I was like, that's not cool at all, and they were laughing about it.
Oh, when he was naked?
He flashed his dick to Amy Poehler.
Remember the scene in... I don't know how like well versed you are in Parks and Rec, but they were in season one or two, one of the early seasons when he was like not his character wasn't quite as
prominent.
Yeah, like you know, all the characters kind of developed over time, but this was early on. There's a scene where Amy Poehler and I think Rashida Jones, I think it was Leslie and Ann opened the door to a house and he's standing there naked. Obviously, it's blurred for us, but like. You assume watching it that he's wearing like nude underwear
those, like,
or something.
Yeah.
But apparently when they really filmed it, he decided to just pull those off and be naked just to get that shock value of like.
So they couldn't get her reaction right. So then he decided to actually show up naked to get the reaction. And then.
Well, I mean, I think it worked, but.
It worked. Yeah. But
is that the scene that they ended up using?
I think they did.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that actually, when it happened, then inspired like a sketch I wrote about how it was about like a guy in the workplace like using his dick to give feedback or to get the right reaction out of people.
Right.
Because, if that happened in any other job, that it's like, oh, you're not reacting the right way. Let me show you.
Right. Like that whole.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, in any other circumstance, like.
Yeah.
Incredibly inappropriate.
Yeah. It's a workplace.
Like, this is your coworker.
I really wonder what effect that had on everybody on set that day.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of wanted, I mean, obviously, like, I don't know. People who were in comedy would be like, oh, it's funny, but it's
like
is
it happened. Yeah.
Like, I would be very interested.
It's just
to hear
one of
actual...
those behaviors that are like deeply normalized.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, nah, man, even if this is what's in the script, that doesn't give you license
and
to...
Yeah. Exactly. And I find it hard to believe that a person of Amy Poehler's caliber wouldn't have eventually given them the reaction they wanted. Like, you didn't have to show Amy Poehler your dick to make her give you the right
and
reaction.
And for all I know, she, you know, if we were to, like, have this conversation in front of her, she might, like, be like, yeah, it was super funny, loved it. Like,
yeah,
I don't know.
Maybe. Sure. I don't know.
Like,
but still.
I'm not going to... It's just, I don't think I'd be pleased.
No, and it just kind of, it just illustrates, like, white men in comedy just, like, pretty much do whatever the hell they want to do.
Yeah. And then, well, even if Amy was fine with it, then, like,
is
other people might see
that
and
it,
do
though?
It.
Like,
and then, yeah,
PAs
you don't
there
know.
That
you're
have to
setting
look at
a
dick.
Bad
yeah,
precedent
yeah.
by showing
and the other
dick.
Actors in the scene. I'm pretty sure Rashida Jones is also in that scene. I'm not positive, but yeah. I mean.
Yeah. Hmm. So I was always kind of like, okay, Chris Pratt, whatever. Like,
yeah.
He's a little bit off. And then, you know.
And
like,
then he, like, got hot and just, I don't know. I just feel like he did. He just, like, you know, he worked. He started working out.
Yeah.
Or, like, became this, like, huge action star.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. But I think he's
it's
always
Osama
been.
It's Osama bin Laden's fault because he was in Zero Dark 30.
I know.
And if he didn't lose weight for Zero Dark 30, people would have paid attention.
But, I think he's always had that sort of, like, conservative dude thing happening. And we just didn't really know it until now. He's a little more vocal about it. Now he's, like, I think he's engaged
to recap,
to
the thing that happened was that
he was talking about his church.
He's part of the same church as
Bieber.
Justin Bieber.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Another Canadian. You know, we're seeing all the parallels here, guys.
I wonder if he was baby of the year. Probably not.
I mean, he wasn't born in Ontario. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
We don't know how
there.
They do.
We'll fact check
I have
that
no
later.
Idea. I don't know anything about Ontario.
Yeah. It's like his specific church, I think, was the whole thing. And how they have, like, a pretty general stance against the lifestyle.
Yeah.
Of homosexuality.
Yeah.
So what did Ellen Page tweet? She, like, asked a question, right?
Yeah. So she tweeted the footage from Colbert, which she was on, like, the week before to promote Umbrella Academy, but instead used that time to talk about environmental racism,
and
which I want to get to.
Very emotional.
Yeah.
Yeah, it got very emotional.
It was great.
It was so great. We loved it. And then, you know, she's calling out Colbert for not being like, hey, no mention of how, like, he's part of a church that's part of the problem that I was talking about last week of people in positions of, like, influence being homophobic and calling him out on that. And then all these people are like, oh, Ellen, why do you have to ruin it? It's just Chris Pratt. Like, let him have his religion and stuff.
Yeah.
But if your, like, religion is bigoted and trying to, you know, convince all these people to, like, demonize who you are as a person and who you love, then that's,
and also
that's not
when
cool.
people say, like, well, it's his religion. Well, it's not really. It's the actual church itself. Like, there's a lot of people who are Christian who belong to churches who are.
It's not like a Catholic church, right?
I think it's. I'm pretty sure it's Christianity. Like, I think it's kind of a. I don't know if it's, like, evangelical or if it's, like, leaning towards.
Like,
that.
They could make their own rules. Is
yes,
the point.
Like this. There's
and
an
they
actual,
have purposefully decided that. I think there was a controversy within that church of, like, a choir member getting married, a male choir member getting married to another man, and that was a big deal.
And he got, I think, like, kicked out of it.
Right.
So,
like, they have actually taken actions against gay people in that church that were really, really terrible things.
It's sin discrimination because they only care about people being gay, but if you, like, lie or cheat,
get divorced
or whatever. Because he just got engaged to
if you're not Catholic,
someone,
that doesn't matter.
That's true. Yeah,
a Kennedy.
I thought it was a thing. A Kennedy. Yeah, yeah.
She got engaged to a Kennedy.
She's in. Isn't she like Maria Shriver's niece or something? Or I don't know.
Yeah.
She's like in that wing of the Kennedy family. Mm. I think.
Yeah, I think she's Maria Shriver's daughter.
Is she a Schwarzenegger daughter? Or I don't know. She's someone.
We're talking about Chris Pratt.
Chris Pratt's fiance.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know anything about that.
Karina's not here today to fact check for us, but you know,
clearly, clearly, his PR team thought that this was a big enough deal that he did respond to Ellen Page on Instagram. I think Instagram stories.
Yeah,
he gave
so it disappeared.
Those, like, tepid, like. Stories of all things.
We need more love.
Like, well,
not hate.
Yeah, it's like all, but you know, what's the they use this blanket language where they're like, that's couldn't be further from the truth. We welcome everyone into our church, meaning like we'll take your money, but
I mean, by welcome everyone, that's such a typical throwaway. Like,
yeah,
we love the people, not the action.
Right, like, right.
Come on.
Because ultimately it's about the people contributing money to a church. That's and how churches are businesses.
I also don't think that Ellen Page was like, please didn't like leave your church as a terrible thing.
Yeah.
I think it's a very simple thing. Like, you work in entertainment. You know a lot of gay people.
Yeah.
Like, it's a very simple thing to say, yeah, my church has this stance. I don't. And I denounce that stance. Mm-hmm. And it's not okay. I'm not going to leave my church because it's my community. Mm-hmm. But I will strive to make it better.
Yeah, right.
And or you like, can say I can try to help from within this place or right. something like that.
It's it's not that hard to get this right.
Yeah.
And he clearly did not.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So. Agree.
Yeah, I don't think Andy Dwyer would like him.
You guys, I have breaking news.
Breaking what? News?
From my mom.
Yes.
Ariel, you were holding out on us.
What?
So my mom writes, because I've asked about your dad, mm-hmm. They are great people. I remember her mom talking about her friend, Gordy. It was Gordon Lightfoot.
What?
Your mom is friends with Gordon Lightfoot?
No. Who the hell's Gordon Lightfoot?
She's thinking, my is she thinking mom of someone else? Is not friends with Gordon Lightfoot.
Who is Gordon Lightfoot? I don't know who that is.
I mean,
That's like a fictional character.
Gordon Lightfoot's a singer.
Gordon Lightfoot is a cartoon character.
No.
He has to be. He's real?
Yeah, no.
Oh, okay.
He's a real person. No, this is a secret to me. I'm not aware of this.
You know, my mom was drinking a lot of wine back then. They had a lot of dinner parties, so she could have
listened. Let's reserve judgment,
academics.
Right?
Yeah. she did say we were at a lot of dinner parties with them.
Definitely,
so
definitely.
She might have got wires crossed with another.
I mean, I'll ask her, but I don't think so.
Gordy Lightfoot. That's great. And that's extremely Canadian.
She also asked, did she get the gifts for being first
definitely.
Baby?
Yeah. Absolutely.
All the presents.
That's so great.
Yeah.
I mean, not that I remember any of them, because obviously I was age zero.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, what a weird age to shower a kid with gifts when they're like 3 hours old.
Yeah. It's great. I think it's also, so I think they gave like a certificate for a restaurant to the parents and then also like a certificate for a babysitter for one night or something.
Oh, that's cool.
Like, I think that was one of the things.
So they gifted a whole experience to your parents for having a baby beginning of the year.
Yeah. I you'd have to fact check me on that. I'm not 100% certain, but I think that was the thing.
It was my mom and one other lady in the hospital. I was actually born during, I don't know if it was officially a blizzard, mm-hmm. but it was a pretty bad
snowstorm.
Sounds
like Montreal.
Yeah.
Canada on New
like
Year's
regular
Eve,
winter,
sounds...
it's hard to know. But there was a ton of snow, and it was just like my mom and one other woman in the hospital waiting to see who gave birth first.
My best friend and I have the same exact birth. We're born like a few hours apart, and she lives here, and we discovered it when we were like 13. Mm. We were at a YMCA event for teens, and... And we're talking about birthdays, and we've been like inseparable ever since. And we're celebrating together this year, which is amazing.
Wait, were you born at the same hospital?
No, I was born in Hawaii, and she was born in Nebraska.
Oh, I always forget that about you.
Yeah, so we were, I think I might have been, I was born at like 7 a.m. Like Pacific time, so I'm not sure when she was. But yeah, we, for the first time ever, we're celebrating together this year, which is great. But it is weird when you meet people that are born like, on the exact same day as you are.
Yeah. I mean, to be clear, Carolyn and I don't have the same birthday,
Right.
My year was a very infertile year, apparently. I'm born on January 2nd.
Wow,
in the afternoon.
They went a whole day and a half without a baby?
Yeah.
I mean, wonder if that was a controversy in the hospital where they're like, guys, we don't have a New Year baby yet.
Yeah,
we don't know.
I don't know.
We got
know.
A couple ladies here, getting close, but I don't know what to tell you. There's no baby.
I have no idea what happened, but something that year. I also think that it, because the hospital itself is not in that city. Like, it's not.
Oh, okay.
So I think maybe you had to, like, submit paperwork to, like, prove that your child was born in a specific time. And maybe that year, like, parents just were not on it.
Wow.
For all
you know
I know.
A missed facts. And you would have been.
Yeah, maybe, I mean, my parents are extremely organized. Like, they would have sent in that paperwork at the right time. Like, they would have claimed that. Yeah. My dad loves
so
a deal,
great.
Too.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Loves
a
deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, same for my dad. I can't believe my mom texted in with fake news about Gordon Lightfoot.
I mean, so I'm not.
Wow, what a publicity stunt.
In case your mother listens to this, I'm not saying she's lying. I don't know.
Okay. Just Dottie trying to steal the spotlight.
Dottie with fake news about Gordon Lightfoot.
I know.
Wow. So hyper-specific.
That's
I love
my
that.
Mom's kind of fake news.
Yeah. It's gonna be, obscure Canadian singers.
Yeah. But you moved away from Montreal at a fairly young age, right?
I did. Yeah. And I moved to the suburbs of Buffalo, and I was like, what is this? This isn't as cool.
It can't be as that different. Is it a lot different?
I mean, if you live
like... I don't want to offend your Canadian sensibilities.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure Montreal's a million times cooler, obviously.
Yeah, Montreal is a million times cooler than Buffalo.
All I know about Buffalo is like on DeFranco.
Yes, that's a good thing to know.
Literally no fact. I couldn't tell you a single thing about Buffalo.
Righteous Babes Records is there, yeah. I think.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah.
I know some things.
You know a lot more than I do.
Righteous Babe Records is there, and you will... on a nice weather day, usually find some lesbian white lady with dreads sitting on the front lawn of Righteous Babe Records playing Ani DeFranco covers waiting to be discovered.
No. Oh, wow.
It's a thing.
Just to clarify, I was a huge Ani DeFranco fan growing up.
Uh-huh. Nice.
She's the reason I started playing guitar.
Oh.
But things have gotten very complicated with Ani DeFranco since then. Like do you know about the controversy
a few years ago?
I don't know.
She planned a guitar retreat a few years ago where like you pay to like, and she had it, she was going to have it, hold it on a plantation in the South, like a former plantation. And there was this huge uproar and she did not respond well to this.
Oh no.
So it's been a little bit hard to love her ever since. That said, I have news.
Okay.
We still keep up with these things. Yeah. She is putting out a memoir this year. Mm. And I intend on reading it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I will update you on that. When
great.
It comes out.
All right. Yeah. I might want to read that just to hear what she has to say about Buffalo. Which is not like Montreal now. And then I moved to like the suburbs of Buffalo.
Uh-huh.
So when you live like in a city and then you move to the suburbs and all you ever knew was like city life,
yeah
then you're like,
I couldn't do the birds.
Yeah, why can't I get around so anywhere?
All I know is finger picking and Ani DeFranco and that's it.
Yeah.
That's yeah,
it's all right. Imagine Buffalo's good.
So she was gonna do like a guitar camp, like a guitar
It was gonna be like a guitar retreat songwriting thing.
Imagine how gay an Ani DeFranco guitar retreat would have
so
been. Like,
so gay.
So many people would have either met their girlfriends or run into exes, and it would have just been chaos.
Yes.
Like, well, I think I've told this story before, that once I tried buying Ani DeFranco tickets on Craigslist, and it turns out it was my ex-girlfriend who was selling them.
Oh, my God.
And she responded to the ad and was like, I think you know why you can't have my extra ticket. Because it was someone being like, I have an extra ticket. I need someone to go with.
Oh, that's funny.
And wrote kind of like they wrote this funny, silly ad. And I'm like, all right, this seems like a cool
ad. You couldn't tell like her voice coming through the ad?
No. So I actually played out this scenario for real.
Yeah.
Because I, my ex, when we broke up, we still had Ani DeFranco tickets.
Classic. Same with me, but for Beyonce.
So, and this is like a month after we've broken up and we still go. I've done this twice. I also did this for a Spice Girl concert.
Amazing.
Many years ago. And that actually turned out pretty well. Like that was not nearly as bad as the Ani DeFranco concert. So we go see Ani DeFranco. And this is like 5.5 years ago.
Yeah.
We were both guitar players. Like, it was like, we liked Ani still then. And so we go to the concert and like, she meets up with me and it was so brutal, so painful. Like, I won't talk about it too much, but like, I'm pretty sure I cried throughout most of the concert.
Oh man.
And
you were in no way the only person there crying.
And I felt
about your
so
ex.
Bad for the people next to me, because it was like sitting seats. Like, it wasn't standing.
Oh, I love concerts.
So
like
I was literally like shaking in my seat for probably most of that experience.
That's bad.
And like, my ex obviously didn't have a good time either.
Yeah.
Sure she didn't.
It was really bad.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I'm really glad that you didn't buy that ticket, because I do not recommend it.
I'm glad she didn't trick me into it, because it was an ex that I told her eventually we could be friends, but I was lying.
That'd be
the
worst,
wanted her not to like contact me. So I was like, just give me a year and then we can be friends. And then I'm actually shocked that she didn't
like try and
trick
yeah,
me that it wasn't and let like me some, just show up and be like, hey, we can be friends now.
Like, oh. Hi, this is the worst rom-com you've ever
seen. Friendship. Yeah.
That's gayer than the time that two of my exes got engaged to each other.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Did they end up getting married?
No, they didn't. My first two girlfriends actually ended up engaged for quite some time. And then I
That's a lot.
I know. And then I think I just sort of dropped in on one of their like Instagrams and noticed like, there hasn't been a picture of them together in quite some time. Then I figured it out. Hmm. So
wow, we're really filling out the lesbian bingo card.
Totally. Yeah.
So going back to Ellen Page, she was talking about environmental racism and how global warming affects some of the poorest communities. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was very interesting and something that I don't think it's talked about much with climate change. So we're transitioning to our topic of science, but a lot of the reporting you do is on...
Yeah.
Climate change specifically and going to these small islands or coastal towns that are affected and are going to be disappearing in these.
Yeah.
Man.
I like to say that I cover the slow moving apocalypse.
Yep.
It is not the most cheerful beat.
Yeah.
not that there are that many cheerful beats when it comes to journalism, but you know, this one is kind of weird because it's like kind of slow and kind of fast, and it does affect vulnerable communities. Like Ellen Page got this right.
Yeah.
Which was really nice for me to hear because very few people do talk about this.
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of people are going to be able to adapt to climate change and those people will be affluent individuals, right?
Yep.
They will raise their houses. They will move further inland. They will get away from flood zones. They will be able to escape, sell their homes even and at a loss, and that will be fine. But I spend a lot of time around people who have to declare bankruptcy. Because they just can't sell their homes because they keep flooding. And this isn't just on the coast. This is inland as well, right? There are like the Mississippi River and like is floods all the time and it's getting worse because there's more rainfall. So it's just, I see this over and over and over again. And it's not just flooding. It's heat that will kill people.
Yeah.
It's agricultural issues, farmers who are going to be in so much trouble down the line. Constant storms, like it's really, really bad. And you know, for the past 2.5 years, I've been traveling the world, spending time with communities that are in really bad shape and that are showing immense strength. It's really, really awesome to see that. But yeah, we're going to have to change something if we want to help these people.
How is it different in other countries? Like, what are other countries doing that you notice that might be different than the U.S., which is totally ignoring the problem?
I was going to say, you mean other than nothing?
Yeah,
right. We're doing?
Well, one example is Spain. Mm-hmm. So I was in Spain in December, and this is a complicated issue. It's not black and white, and it's not necessarily, you know, great or bad, but what they've done is they signed an agreement with coal companies, and they shut down almost all of the coal mines in Spain at the end of December.
Wow.
They are still going to use coal to power some of their electricity. They're going to import it, and there's still, like, one operating mine somewhere. But that means laying off 1,500 people.
Mm-hmm.
That's not that many coal miners, but the U.S. doesn't have that many coal miners left either.
Yeah.
So it's sort of this weird thing where they laid off a bunch of people and decided to do like a fair transition where they were going to provide some of these miners with retirement packages and job transition plans that were allowed to like retraining and then environmental restoration, all of these things. It's not going really well. Other than some miners who will get early retirement.
Yeah.
I spoke to a miner who's 43 and he's retiring and he's like kind of happy about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, everyone in Europe doesn't retire at 43.
Yeah. I was like, wow, what took him so long?
Yeah. Right. So old. But a lot of these people are freelance contractors. They're not going to get any of these benefits. And the retraining plans have not been put in place fast enough. So they're kind of floundering. Like they have to go on unemployment. These communities are largely have been sent, and the U.S. has this a lot. You know, in Appalachia is communities that are centered around a single industry like coal mining.
Yeah.
So what you end up with is communities where there's nothing going on. Like the bars are literally called like coal mine something something, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So like the miners bar, and then you end up with a community where that is gone. And so young people move away, old people are all on unemployment. It really decimates a community. And regardless of how you feel about coal mining, seeing these people who, you know, have for generations have mm-hmm. been doing this thing, seeing them sort of lose their livelihood overnight is really devastating.
Yeah.
And a lot of like environmental groups and unions, like world, national, international unions have praised this deal in Spain. And it, as an example, like sort of a microcosm, like a sort of like Green New Deal-ish type thing. And in the long run, when they do shut down their coal-fired power plants, which I think they're supposed to do within the next 5 years, that could make an impact on their emissions. Like they could actually meet maybe their Paris Climate Agreement goals.
Yeah.
So like, it's sort of exciting to see a country do something like this, but at the same time, you have to think about the communities that will be impacted by this.
Yeah. Sure. You have to have a plan for people.
Right. What do you do with all mm-hmm. the people who have, you know, for better or for worse, have been working for industries that we now consider like highly polluting and, mm-hmm. You know, causing global warming.
Yeah.
So it's been interesting to also see the flip side of that. So that segment is available online, by the way.
Yes. A lot of the segments that mm-hmm. you do are available.
Yeah, on YouTube. So the show is on HBO, but we have this awesome deal with HBO where a week after our segments air, we can put them on the Vice News YouTube channel. So
cool.
Great.
They're available. So like that is one way that a country like Spain, for instance, is dealing with it. The U.S. is nowhere near shutting down its coal mines, where under the Trump administration, they're actually trying to open up a new coal mine. Like, that is not happening, but ultimately that would be the goal if we did do something like AOC's Green New Deal.
Yeah, yeah. And right now, so we're under this administration that seems to be very anti-science. And also anti-gay. Is mm-hmm. that because science is inherently gay?
I mean, in my case, yes.
Yeah, okay.
But is this a serious question? Where do I take this? Yes.
I asked it.
The administration is definitely, there are a lot of anti-science tendencies.
Yeah.
For sure. I mean, just this week, Darla Shine, who's Bill Shine's wife, who is the communications mm-hmm. Director for the White House, was tweeting anti-vaccine related tweets like all week.
Yep. Yes.
And there's a measles outbreak right now in Washington State and parts of Oregon.
I have seen that the anti-vaxxers have come after you.
Yeah, they have in the past. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You Googled me. That's what it was. Yeah. Yeah.
I Googled you. Yeah, there are a few articles out there. And I noticed that various right-wing dum-dums have come after you.
Yeah.
Well, I...
And
with the anti-vax issue, though, sometimes I see people who aren't necessarily even right-wing. Like, that seems to be the one issue that sometimes there's left-wing people who...
That's true.
You know
that's
what I mean?
Very true.
The demographic the is surprising sometimes.
Yeah. And I think just
if anything
their rationale
can bring people together, it's a good conspiracy.
Exactly. And well, the right-wing seems to be, like, anti-vax because of more, maybe leaning more towards religious Christianity kind of things, and the left ones are because
I don't want
Jenny
the government
told them
to tell me what to do is sort of the conservative stance on things. Like, that's very much what it's like in, like, Texas.
Yeah.
But then if you go to California, it's the like granola type parents who are like, let's only put organic things in my kid's body
because they read some like celebrity mommy blog that told them not to.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So it is very much a like white suburban type of, and like urban as well, type of thing. And actually one of the things that's really unsettling about it is that some of these groups prey on immigrant communities. So you'll have an immigrant community that will recently settled somewhere in the U.S., and they will send representatives and talk to them about how vaccines cause autism, which, by the way, the vaccines do not cause autism.
Right. Yeah. That's been fully debunked, right?
Yes.
Like,
yes.
That's
and
not
vaccines
over and over
are
again.
Very safe. They're really great. And they're one of the reasons why people don't die of the measles all the time.
Yeah.
You know, so
it's like one of the best scientific breakthroughs.
Like, I wonder if
since the dawn of civilization.
To me, it's like, if God was, like, real, he's sitting in his office and he's like, but I gave you the fucking vaccine. I sent people to invent this. Yeah. I tried to help you guys. Like, if that's your rationale, like, well, it's God will take care of us. Well, he did.
Like, and I've talked to a lot of anti-vaccine, like, vaccine hesitant and anti-vaccine parents. And to be fair and very clear, like, these people really care about the health of their kids.
Well, of course
they're just
do.
Trying to protect them. I what I've found is that, and as you've mentioned, right, it's not necessarily just like right wing people or left wing people. The main thread that I can find is that it tends to be people who are prone to believing conspiracy theories.
Exactly. Like, media literacy is so important, and reading, like, you know, you people like us, and generally a lot of people, like, I think in our age group and our level of, like, internet literacy, look at the source of an article first. Like, if I see something, show me where it's from. And then from
and
there, you can...
When you go down the anti-vaccine rabbit hole, there's a lot there, right?
Yeah,
like, if you're looking for a certain kind of narrative, you will find it.
Yeah, if you're looking to confirm your narrative, because I've gone a little bit down the rabbit hole just to see the arguments, because I know some people who did not vaccinate their child and was, you know, engaging in a conversation about this. And I'm like, I want to see what they're reading. I'm like, okay, I guess if you're looking to confirm this and want to ignore the entire medical community that has said that's not true.
Right, right.
Then, you know, but that's the thing. It's like to believe all this, you really have to think that there's like a conspiracy that every medical and science professional is in on.
Yeah.
To get people to do this.
And the thing is that, like, in my conversations with parents who believe these things, you can't really change their minds, right? Like, they have an answer to everything that you'll say. I remember, I think I've said, like, things like, so if you were diagnosed with cancer, you would undergo chemo, which is literally designed to kill your cells.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you won't vaccinate your kid, even though, like, it's not a poison.
Yeah.
Right.
Chemo is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, that doesn't work, right? And it's the same thing with climate deniers, right? I can't change your mind. I would love to be able to change your mind. I can't. What I found is that people change their minds on their own when they encounter an actual threat, right? I think one of the problems with vaccines is that they work so well that we're really far removed from the threat.
Yeah.
Right. We haven't seen
people
some of these
don't remember
polio. Generations.
Right.
I mean,
they don't remember polio. Yeah. They don't remember large outbreaks of the measles. But right now in Washington State, because there is a large outbreak, I've spoken to a lot of doctors recently and people from the Clark County Department of Health. Everybody keeps telling me, we have had so many people get vaccines in January. It's crazy.
Wow.
The vaccine, like the rate of people getting vaccinated, their kids getting vaccinated have shot up.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden it's real.
Yeah.
All of a sudden there's a kid in the class who has some fucking Oregon Trail disease.
Exactly. And if you, like, if you transpose that to climate denial, that's when things get really depressing because you're like, oh,
we're not going to believe it until
what
the
is it
sea level
take
rises. Exactly. Yeah.
For people to actually say, like, your house needs to be threatened, like, actually and actively, and not just, you know, how long are you going to say, no, this isn't what it is?
Yeah.
What do you think? What's your answer to that? Like, what is it actually?
Yeah. I mean, the people who change their minds are people who are genuinely confronted with this.
Yeah.
But it's probably going to be too late, right? Like, but
before
there's enough people to really change the tide of behavior,
that's sometimes I feel like that.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. Sometimes I feel like that. And other times I look at things like the fact that young people increasingly, like, at some point,
that's
these
true.
Kids
right.
are going to be in power, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And
AOC.
Yeah.
Right. People like that, right?
Yeah.
And there are a lot of really, really well-informed, the people who speak really well about this who are very young, and at some point those people will have a lot more weight. So maybe that's, maybe it's a changing of the guard.
Yeah.
And maybe that can happen sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
And largely Americans do understand that climate change is real. I've been trying to not say believe that climate change is real anymore, by the way. It's a very like specific, like I want to ask politicians, like, do you understand that climate change is real? Because yeah.
that's a very,
that should be yeah. the wording now.
Absolutely.
It's not, do you believe in it?
It's not a theory. It's a fact. Yeah.
It's a fact. Do you understand climate change?
Yeah. A lot of climate change deniers, it's not like that they're denying that climate change is happening. It's that they think that it's natural
right,
and
or that
has
it's
nothing
not,
to do.
Right. So then you have to go, do you understand human-induced yeah. climate change?
Do you understand yeah, yeah. that temperature and climate are two different things? You know what
right.
I mean? Like,
yeah.
well,
yeah.
well, how is it? This,
that's
or
a
like
test the president
like
fails.
The weather, oh and,
weather
climate
and climate are different
things.
Yeah, yeah. Like, yeah, yeah. yes, it's cold. And like, if just because there's a fucking blizzard in December or January
yeah. right.
doesn't mean that we're not under a significant shift in the overall climate.
Yes.
I mean,
yeah.
other than the president, I think most yeah. Republicans do understand
that. I think
they that,
fully understand it. I truly do.
And I think that they also...
I don't think they give a fuck, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because they're old and they don't have
that's
to...
That's a thing. I think they know that humans are causing it, but they know it's bad for business. So,
because
so
they
can go and
of,
be like, well, you know, you can't be 100% sure that all this,
right.
all these toxins we're releasing...
Because there's cash
gas.
And checks yeah. from oil lobbyists. And,
yeah.
you know, it's all like it's... I think you're right when you say the changing of the guard. That's the only, that's honestly the only thing I can, the only like thing that that helps me fall asleep a little bit is just knowing that like basically we're going to have to wait out this whole generation of older
right.
people to die.
Right.
Like that's it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but like if you're 70
I mean,
years
some,
old,
some people who are
people
older have
who,
been able to change their minds.
Absolutely.
I definitely like always sure. leave the door open for that.
Of course.
And some people
I'm talking,
who are older are already super aware of this and speak about
I'm
this.
I'm talking
really
about people
well.
In terms of like
yeah.
decision-making people.
Yeah.
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
you know, these people that just don't give a shit about the climate because they will not be around to suffer
problem.
The consequences.
Yeah.
You know, like it sucks. I mean, I look at there's a few big reasons why I've decided I'm never having kids. But one of the main ones, honestly, like not to bum anyone out, but like, what's the planet going to be like in 50 years? Like if I had a kid today,
yeah,
when they're my age, when they're 33, like what is this going to look like?
Yeah.
What's the map going to look like?
You know, I've had those thoughts too. And that is like a legitimate thing to think about, but I'm like, at any time, hasn't there always been something like
oh, absolutely.
Some existential
like,
threat?
What
absolutely,
horrible yeah. thing, whether it's like the Russians
yeah,
or like World War II
or disease.
Yeah.
Disease.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Like, there's always been like,
I understand.
Now's not a good time to bring a kid into
no,
the world because
yeah.
humans are trash, but also
absolutely.
Beautiful and
beautiful, beautiful trash.
Yeah, beautiful yes. trash.
Beautiful trash for sure. But yeah, it's like, I just can't, I can no longer take people who don't understand climate change seriously in a decision-making capacity. Like I can't do it. Like we're not, like it's over. That's why I think it's so brilliant to watch people like AOC. There's a lot of people
yeah.
that are doing a lot of good work.
Well, it's also
she's
really
obviously under bright lights, but
it's upsetting Republicans how popular the Green Deal is because they're all laughing at it and then
oh.
they take a poll
and it's
most
like
people
80%
like,
approval rate of people
yeah.
our age.
Yeah. I mean, it's the Green New Deal is complex in that it's like not a it's not a bill. It's a non-binding proposal. And
yeah.
it's, you know, even if there is a vote on it, it will all be largely symbolic. But it is one of these like big sweeping things that is really radical in that it is probably one of the first large scale plans like this proposed anywhere in the world where they're linking these economic policies and climate policies and social justice issues together. And saying, hey, we can't do one thing without doing the other.
Yeah.
And it's actually like, it's very, very radical. And yeah, when people say it's very socialist, like I don't disagree, it is.
Yeah.
It sort of makes sense that if you're going to address climate change, you have to have economic policies alongside it.
Yeah.
But they definitely like don't break down. We don't know how much it's going to cost. They don't break down all these other things. Like I have a lot of questions about this deal.
Sure.
I think it's really interesting.
Yeah.
I'm going to be paying attention, very close attention to it. And it feels like there's a lot of cool momentum around it and people are talking about it. It's nice to see people that I didn't necessarily expect to be talking about this, to be talking about it. I have no idea where it's going though.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. As long as we don't get swallowed by the ocean.
Yeah.
So, tell us a little bit about you getting into science and then making that transition to being a journalist?
Yeah. So I always wanted to be a zoologist. The plan was to be a herpetologist specifically. I wanted to study snakes.
Nice.
And from the time I was like 5 years old, like
yeah.
I was,
no, I'm just thinking about your snakes.
Oh, my snake tweet
last night.
My dad used to have them as pets when I was a kid.
Oh, wow.
So I really
what
like.
What kind?
He had a California King for a long time, and then he had a corn snake for a while.
Yeah, those
too,
are like
think.
The standard,
yeah. Standard like domestic ones.
Yeah,
he didn't
like
have any of the big like
pet snakes.
He didn't have any of the big, you know,
danger
like. No constrictors or anything, but I was always like very used to holding them as a kid, and like I'm still not afraid of them at all. Like they don't bother me.
Yeah,
I wouldn't want to see one in my apartment. But,
yeah,
you know, like,
I have a healthy fear of snakes.
I just
think they're so gorgeous.
They are. They're fascinating.
Fascinating, and I guess they're
the way they eat is very interesting.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, we used to go to the pet store and buy like. Pinkies. Yeah. They were $1 each, and the little teeny baby mice.
Yeah.
And I remember sitting in the car just holding. They came in like a, you know, those like Chinese carton takeout containers?
That's true.
They would wrap them in those, just put them in little boxes.
Yeah.
So I'm like, you know, 12 sitting here holding a few live little.
Oh, your dad went the live route.
Oh, yeah. They had,
that can be dangerous for the snakes sometimes because, like, you know, the food bites back.
Yeah, these ones were like the like newborns, so they weren't even.
Yeah,
they were kind of like wiggling, but they weren't really.
Yeah.
But yeah, we would take them home and you just you drop them in there and you let the nature take its course.
Yeah, I so my father, who's Trinidadian, like grew up like sending his dogs on iguanas that would like hang out on the fence, right? Like he does not view reptiles. And amphibians as pets.
Yeah.
So I was never allowed to have these animals.
Yeah.
They were
but
considered
was,
more like pests, basically. Like,
oh, yeah, totally. Yeah. He was like, you want me to pay how much for like a snake?
Right.
Seriously?
Yeah.
He was very much against it.
Yeah.
And my mother was horrified and my sister was not. Like, I think I had this very like tomboy attitude where I was like, anything that grosses my sister out, like,
I'm
so down. Like, I wanted tarantula. Like, I was really into critters.
Yeah.
Tarantulas
are so cool.
they are.
No, I have full body chills right now thinking about that.
There are like tarantulas that do this like cool drumming thing when they mate. It's very, you should watch. Look it up on YouTube. It's totally worth it.
A woman explained to me at a desert museum in Arizona, and she had the tarantula on her hand, and then she was explaining about like how they kill the men. And I'm like, keep talking about
this.
Tell me more. This sounds
awesome. If they're like a powerful tool for like.
Right.
Yeah. You know, smashing the patriarchy, then I suppose we could have our own little tarantula army.
anyway,
go on.
Continue.
Anyways,
continue.
I wanted to do that. I was a big nerd and a jock, incidentally. It was a weird mishmash. But I ended up studying zoology in college for my bachelor's degree in Ontario. And I, towards the end of it, I was like studying these salamanders and I was kind of bored.
Mm-hmm.
Because these were nocturnal salamanders who, like, you will understand this, I think. They like around like 9 degrees Celsius temperature. So like pretty close to freezing.
Yeah.
And I would have to like hang out with them at like 1 a.m. in this freezer.
Wow.
And just like look at them. Do like it was
just
about conspecific
their
territorial behaviors. So I was like looking at them get pissed off at each other, basically. And
that's what I do at Cubbyhole.
I
find people from across the room and I'm like, I can tell those two are really upset with each other. And
right.
I just sit there quietly watching them.
Yeah. Oh God.
Anyway.
So I was listening to podcasts the whole time.
Yeah.
And at some point I was like listening to like Science Friday and like Radiolab. And at some point it sort of dawned on me that somebody was writing this stuff. Like science reporting is a job.
Yeah.
And that is the moment where I let myself realize that like actually the research thing was like not my deal.
Yeah.
It was very isolating. There was never anybody with me. And I love talking about science. I love reading about science. I love communicating science. Doing the science, I feel like I don't have the attention span for it. I have like very short bursts of like, I'm going to find out everything about this topic over a course of 3 weeks. And once that 3 weeks is up, like I'm ready to move on to the next thing. And scientists, like they have to, they spend their lives studying a single aspect of a single organism. And that is not me.
Yep. That's why I dropped out of a PhD program once I realized the reality of it being isolating and knowing that I did not care about anything.
What did you study for your PhD?
Ugh, marketing.
Wait, seriously? Oh my God.
I know.
But focusing on one particular thing.
My dad was a marketing professor too. Was I trying to please him? I don't think so. But maybe.
Wow.
I went to a marketing PhD program because growing up, my dad was like, being a marketing professor is wonderful. It's a great lifestyle. And, you know, my dad, he was like, around during the summers, like he took a sabbatical the year I was born to like raise me, you know.
Yeah, don't get me wrong, like my parents have had a really nice life because they met during their PhD, their marketing PhD.
Yeah, it's a sweet gig, but you can't fake your way into it, which is what I learned. I was like, oh, I can, you know, I'll take the tests, I'll apply, I'll get in, and I did, and I'm like, oh my God, I don't care about any of this
work
stuff.
Here. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, you have to care about it. And then also, like, care about it enough to not care where you live. Because after they place you, like, a lot of the people that I entered the program with now live in, like, Kentucky. And, that, like, you know, are working at these random universities where they have openings because your research and your job is so specific. And I know we have a lot of listeners in the science.
In the
sciences.
Academia world in general.
And I mean, it's also not the way that it used to be when our parents were doing this, right? Like, there were a lot of more job openings back then. Getting tenure was so much easier. Like, it's just a completely different landscape.
Yes.
So, yeah, I don't blame you.
But anyway, sorry, not to make this
that's
about
all right.
Me, but I get it. I understand not wanting to study the same thing for years.
I remember going home that night and going like and immediately Googling like science journalism, thinking that I was like a pioneer putting these two words together. Like, does this job exist?
Yeah.
And immediately programs popped up and a bunch of resources popped up. So what I did, this was like the summer before my last year of college, I started writing for the newspaper at my university, and like I had this science column. And I applied to NYU's Science, Health, and Environmental Reporting program, their master's program. So the minute I graduated, like, I was out of there. Like, I was doing a master's in journalism after that.
Oh, great. Okay.
And that's how I moved to New York.
Oh, cool.
And during that time...
So you figured out everything in good time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was actually, like, really perfect timing. I didn't even skip a beat, which is... I don't know. It really worked out for me. If I had realized it just a couple months later, I don't know what I would have done, because I don't think I'm the type of, like, because academia is so important in my family, I don't know, like, I wouldn't have taken, like, a year off. I would have gone off and done something else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I probably would have done a master's in zoology as well.
Yeah.
So I moved to New York, and I ended up, the program was great and gave me a lot of good contacts, and I ended up interning for Quartz and Scientific American and Nature Medicine, which is a scientific journal. And then I got hired by The Verge, Fox Media website, was their science reporter for a while. It was really, really great there. And then Vice tapped me on the shoulder and was like, hey, do you want to be on TV? And my wife likes to tell this story that when we first started dating, she asked me, like, you're a journalist. Do you ever want to be on TV? And I was like, no.
Yeah.
Way.
Yeah.
Definitely not.
Yeah.
But at The Verge, I had been doing videos. And I found that I enjoyed it, right?
Yeah.
Writing scripts is a very sort of specific way of writing, as I'm sure you're aware. And, like, the language of it is very sort of loose, and it's nice to write something that's more conversational. And when they tapped me on the shoulder, I was like, I mean, I don't know, but okay. I'll give it a try. The show didn't exist yet. It worked out. I'm really glad I made that leap.
Yeah. Wow. What a cool journey.
That's amazing. Yeah.
That's so cool. How is it being queer in that space?
Well, so one thing I'll say is, like, as a woman, being a science journalist, like, there are a lot of us. The program that I graduated from tends to graduate, like, if not 60 to 70%, like, they had one year it was only 100% women in the program.
Wow.
After I graduated. So... the problem is that once you get higher up in the ranks, like, the people who are really well known are all men.
Yeah.
Which is very typical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? And those men are, a lot of them are my friends and they're really fantastic, but it's true. Like, if you're a well-known science journalist, chances are you're a dude.
Yeah.
So that is, that's a little bit of a problem in the industry as a whole, right? The professors tend to be men, a lot of them.
Sure.
As a queer person of color, who is like gender nonconforming and on TV, like that's also like a whole thing. Like if you, you know, go through the YouTube comments on the Vice News channel, which I try to not do.
YouTube comments are the worst comments.
It's like a cesspool of like people constantly questioning my gender, constantly, you know, just like terrible, terrible things. And I've like talked about this publicly, like even going out in the field, like I get misgendered in the field when we're reporting sometimes, and that can create really weird situations that can be kind of hard. So like there are different levels of things that I have to deal with. And they're not just internet based. They're also like my interactions with the source based, right? Like this one time I was reporting, the segment is available online. I spent an entire morning with a woman. We were doing a story about wild horses in the US, cause there's a, like an overpopulation of wild horses and it's a little bit of a problem. And she spent the entire morning referring to me as he, and all her friends were using the correct pronouns for me the whole time. And I remember like, and my producer was like, what do we do? And I was like, I shook my head and I was like, no, like just be chill. And at the end of the day, as we were packing up in the cars, like it was about midday, I guess, to that point, I went over to her. I said, thank you so much. I really enjoyed spending time with you today. Just so you know, I'm a woman. And I'm telling you this because I don't want you to be embarrassed later. And she said, okay. And then she hugged me. To this day, I have no clue what that hug was about.
Right.
I don't know what she was thinking. I don't know what happened. But I like went back in the like van with my crew afterwards and like I related this and they're like, I don't know, man. Like this is looks very strange. But I work with a lot of really lovely people who are very good at being really supportive. Like I get misgendered constantly in like TSA type environments.
Yep.
Oh, of course.
Every time I travel, like it's just, and it tends to be white people who misgender me.
Yeah.
Which is, what I have said publicly before is that I think that being misgendered is one of the ways that I experience racism on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Because I think my face, like people of color, it's not a like straight and fast rule, but people of color tend to be able to read my face and understand. And like also the gender norms for black people are different.
Yeah.
And I can
actually affirm that.
I
would say never misgendered by a person of color. It's always usually white women who misgender me.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't give a shit. Like it's never, it's obviously like, it's usually a quick sort of like,
Cashiers and bathrooms.
Cashiers. Things like that. Yeah. But it is, I have actually noticed that over time that it's like, wow, I am never, even when I'm like, look really masculine, like when I'm fully leaning in, never once am I misgendered by a person of color.
Yeah. And it's a really weird, like if I just feel like my features are not read by white people in the same way.
Yeah.
And it just like, it feels very strange all the time. And because when I got this job, I started traveling a lot more. I started encountering that a lot more. Cause like in my little like Brooklyn bubble, like things are pretty chill.
Mm-hmm.
But traveling was this moment where all of a sudden I was encountering this a lot.
Yeah.
And it was really weird.
Huh.
But you know, I've also had really good experiences when it comes to that stuff. So it depends. Yeah. But it definitely like the way that I present and being a queer journalist and being a person of color and being like all of these like things
and knowing about
me.
Scientists, some people are probably like, oh, must be a guy.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
They know about science.
Totally.
If they were on the fence, you being knowledgeable about something that's not quote unquote feminine.
Right.
Might throw them off.
Yeah.
That's a lot of like intersections with you, you know,
I end up interviewing a lot of folks who are more conservative because I have this climate change beat and I really care about what conservative folks feel and think about climate change. Like, this really matters. And a lot of those communities are going to be really affected as well.
Sure.
But I do end up in situations where I'm like, ooh, like, I am visibly queer.
Yeah. I know when you're talking about these coal towns perceived? And everything,
yeah.
I'm like,
yeah.
Imagine walking into that coal bar.
And one thing that I will say is that I think that I sort of had to, like, worry about traveling. I thought that things were going to be a lot, like, it hasn't been easy, but I thought things were going to be harder.
Okay.
And I am a lot less worried about being in places that I would consider conservative than I was, you know, granted I'm like with a crew with cameras, like, it's all very protective in that sense. But I've been so pleasantly surprised by people who have been really warm to me when I didn't necessarily know whether they would be.
Yeah.
And that has made me, like, love this country a lot more.
Yeah. I mean, that is something that if you go to, like, smaller parts of the country with people that you, like, assume are going to hate you.
There's just, like, this worry, right?
Who
this,
you
like,
are.
How am I going to be received here? Like, if I go into this restaurant, you know, people stare. They always stare.
Oh,
but
yeah.
You know, how is that interaction going to go? And sometimes it is just the best and it's really cool. And I just, I'm the people who come up to me and say, like, hey, we love the show.
Yeah.
It's, I'm always surprised. And it's, you know, it's folks that I don't necessarily would even expect to watch the show, and they do, and they're really appreciative, and it's just awesome. It's a really great feeling.
Because I think sometimes it's easy to let the internet lead us to believe that all these people like hate us, and if they ever met us in person they would be nasty. But the people who do our theme song, they tour the country and they do a lot of, like, couch surfing and small towns and stuff.
Yeah.
And they're like the most liberal people I know. Mm-hmm. But they've had, like, really awesome conversations they've said with, like, hardcore Republicans, but who treat them like so well anyway. I don't know. It's always,
you know,
interesting.
The, like, Southern hospitality thing is real. And,
they,
and it is,
and they're
amazing.
Curious. They're curious, like, not in a mean way, but they're like, oh, like, you're one of these, like, tell me more about it.
And
because
honestly,
they're isolated from it in real life.
Yeah. And when they encounter somebody who genuinely just wants to know how they're feeling, what they think, how they're doing, regardless of whether I personally agree with what they're saying, like, that means something. And it's a huge privilege for me to be able to have these conversations. Like, I'm really grateful for this job every day. Like, it blows my mind.
That's cool.
And incidentally, going on the show, I've gotten a lot less death threats in the last few years,
nice.
Which has been nice.
Wow.
Good. Going from writing for a tech website to being on the TV has actually made things a lot better for me. So it's been interesting.
I wouldn't expect that.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
How refreshing.
man, the internet. All right. Yeah. Well, we need to wrap up and get to our listener question. I want to make sure we have enough time because this one's a doozy.
Can't wait.
They start off strong. Hello, beautiful lesbians. That's how we like to be addressed.
Okay, I'm on your side. Keep going.
I'm reaching out in search of your opinion since you always have such sage advice. Again, it helps with compliments if you want us to answer your question on this podcast.
They know us.
I came out to my loved ones several years back. Since then, I haven't had a single committed relationship. When you mentioned serial dating, that's me, mostly because I just didn't have time to invest in a relationship. I realized that they take work, and I was always upfront on my dates that I had a pretty full schedule, single mom of a very busy kid. Mm-hmm. So this is someone who came out a little bit later in life. So she went on a day. Once things progressed to a place where the girl wanted more, I just wasn't able to give her that. That sounds shitty, but I repeat, I was always very upfront about this. Fast forward many years, my daughter is now the age of your primary demographic. She mentioned that we have a lot of baby gay listeners. I'm ready to make that step into a more committed relationship, as terrifying as that is. A little while back, I met someone on our first date. We went to 5 different places over the course of 8 hours because we really just didn't want the date to end. And not date places. Target, Michaels, etc.
Amazing.
Very lesbian.
Very on brand.
It's a lot of lesbian details here.
I'm in.
Okay, since then we've been full speed ahead. First person I introduced my family. I've met her family. Everything within me tells me that I met my person. I thought that on our very first date, the chemistry was undeniable. Here's my question. Given that this is really my first committed relationship with a woman, despite having dated many women, is it possible that we're going too far too fast? Should I slow things down? I've dated other girls since, but I decided I was ready for a... Wait, I've dated other girls since I decided I was ready for a committed relationship. Not one has had this impact on me. Part of me says blah, blah, blah. Okay, I think we know the question.
Yeah.
This is, yeah.
Okay. No, I think go all in. If you think, you know, yes, this is like your first committed relationship, but it sounds like you've kind of like... dated enough to know, you know, I think when you know, and that's, there's nothing wrong with that. I don't see anything wrong with committing to this person at all. I don't know. And I'm like the last person to ever say that. So
yeah.
I think it's great. I mean, I think you're happy.
It kind of sounds like she's answering her own question in that she says like she has dated around. Nobody else has had this impact on her. I think like, yeah, I mean, I'm like struggling to find the question in here because like even the answer, like the question itself seems to be answering itself.
Yeah, mm-hmm. She knows.
So yeah, go for it. Be happy. It's really great that you set boundaries with the people that you were mm-hmm. dating with and were upfront. I don't think that's shitty at all. As long as, you know, things were clear, then that's fine. Mm-hmm. If you're ready to be like... you just got to put yourself out there and actually say your true feelings. So like in the same way that you communicated your boundaries before, make sure that you communicate your feelings, and that might mean getting shot down. So mm-hmm. just do it. It like doesn't matter any, like what are you going to lose?
Yeah. It sounds like your fear of commitment is like you feel like, wait, this isn't normal. Well, this is different for you because maybe this is a great match for you.
Right.
So
sometimes it feels a little off kilter, but that's probably a good thing.
Yeah. It's a good sign. Yeah. It's like if you've been with a bunch of women and it was easy for you to keep it like casual and not make time for them and not invest emotionally, it's probably because they weren't the right people for you to invest. Or maybe like you weren't, like you said, you weren't ready. And now it sounds like you are ready and you found a good person. So
yeah,
you know?
Sounds pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, congrats.
And if you're like later in life, the like, is it too soon, too fast thing? Like, I feel like that timeline gets accelerated quite a bit.
Yes.
Yes.
So it doesn't feel bad and like, I it should feel fine.
Yeah.
And also, like, not to be flippant about it, but it is the lesbian way.
Yes.
So, like, hard and fast.
Yeah. Yes. You know, so far you're talking about, like, Target and Michaels and all that stuff. You're on brand.
Yeah.
So just, you know, lean in.
Yeah.
Yes.
Lean in. You're doing fine.
You're doing fine. Go for it. Best of luck to you in your new relationship. This is amazing.
Ariel, where can people find your work? You mentioned on YouTube, on HBO. Where mm-hmm. can they follow you on social media?
Yeah. Well, there's the Vice News YouTube channel. My Twitter is @ADRS and my Instagram is @ADRS. So feel free to follow me on that. I'm also on Facebook. I don't post a lot. I don't love that social mm-hmm. network at all. I am on Goodreads.
Goodreads.
I think it's @ArielDRoss. And yeah, I actually review books on a regular basis. I don't write a lot, but I
you seem
you
super
know, following
proud
on Goodreads.
Of this. Yeah.
I feel like we need to set up a Dyking Out Goodreads
totally.
Account.
I think we're missing a part of them.
We would
need
have
to
the most followers probably on Goodreads if that's where we went.
You've probably heard of us on Goodreads.
Yeah. All right. Great. Well, you can follow us at Dyking Out everywhere. You can follow me at TGI Carolyn.
And
you,
go ahead.
If you have a question, dykingout@gmail.com.
Follow me @TheSarahYork on Twitter and Instagram.
And yeah.
I think that's about it.
Thanks. That's it. Well, Ariel, thank you so much for being here today.
This
was a very interesting, wonderful conversation, especially the part about us having our lives intertwined.
Totally.
That was a lot of fun.
That was special to be a part of.
That was very special. Happy
about that.
Great. And we can't wait to watch more of your work in the future. Best of luck to you.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for diking out with us, everybody.
All right.
Dike out with us next week.
Yes.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it.
or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Linsky.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.